time for You Oughta Know, a weekly conversation about all things automotive with your host, Toby Edmonds.
Good morning, Toby.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, it is a nice week before Christmas. Not anything in the way of precipitation down, just cold the way winter's supposed to be. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, fabulous. It's, as you pointed out, it's cold, but it's not ridiculously cold. So it's just chilly enough to make it feel kind of like it's actually December in Alaska.
Right. Well, I was looking yesterday at projections for cars for 2018, and there were a couple of things that struck me I wanted to ask you about. It appears that General Motors is coming out with a diesel in its mid-sized or smaller SUV that's going to get somewhere in the mid-40s in terms of mileage. Are you aware of that?
I've heard the rumors for a long time now, and I knew that they were supposed to be putting them in, like, their smaller trucks, and they've been talking about bringing them out into their cars. So it doesn't surprise me that they announced that, no.
Yeah, I'm just curious, knowing your long history with diesels, in particular with diesels that come from Europe, this seems to be an interesting move. Because along with that, the second thing that was reported, and it was Toyota, that said basically that every vehicle they made was going to have a variant in the form of an electric version, a hybrid version, but will no longer be gas only. And that was going to happen within the next few years. That's going to be developing. So it would seem that in terms of Japanese manufacturers, we're not seeing anywhere near the development in diesel. Is that what you're observing?
Yes. Actually, both Japan and China have announced that I think it's 2020, they will no longer have any form of, they will no longer produce any form of a gasoline motor, at least for the Asian market. I'm not quite too sure if they've announced that for any production in America. But at least for their Asian market, they will no longer be producing any form of a gasoline-type motor. As you pointed out, it's all either going to be a hybrid or electric.
Wow. And even though in some cases this looks to be, as with Volvo and others, you know, 2 to 5 years or more in the future, it certainly shows a trend that, as I've experienced, seems to catch up faster than I appreciate. You know, you look out there and you say, okay, what's happening is happening each year. A few more vehicles that come in all kinds of versions. You can have a straight gas, you can have a hybrid, or you can have an electric version, and giving consumers considerable choice.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. All right, just wanted to make sure that I was not looking at something that was pie in the sky, but looked like it was the direction things were moving.
And it's very much so the direction things are moving.
Right. And I guess the point you just made was the interesting one to me. I think of the world as even though we know that there are Mercedes that are made in the United States, and there are other cars, Ford cars that are made in Canada, and there's a mix across the world of where parts come from. I still think about the European market and then the Asian market, and then and increasingly that obviously China, and then the American market as being somewhat separate in terms of almost a cultural divide about the kinds of vehicles that people like to have. Do you think that is going away, and we're looking at more of a world market?
No, I don't think it is. I think that we're seeing a little bit more of a mingling, for sure. It definitely in terms of body styling. A lot of domestic manufacturers are adopting quite a few of the design styles or the design cues from the European market into their designs. So, you know, you see a lot more Fords, and Chevys with very European-looking styling for their vehicles. But as far as going to a world market, it's not, you know, the difference in variations of cars and their styling and the models that are available are not only, it's not only culturally based, but it's also regulation based. As I'm sure most people are aware, the American government, we have quite a few safety standards that have to be met for any form of a vehicle that is brought into America. And there's quite a few Asian market vehicles and European market vehicles that don't meet those, either the safety standards or the emission standards. So it's if we were to go to a, say, for hypothetically, it was something that was agreed upon as far as, you know, making it a world market for all types of vehicles. So you could get the exact same vehicle in Germany that you could over in Kentucky. You would have to do away with or at least standardize the regulations as far as state safety and emissions go in order to make all those vehicles available in all markets.
Okay. Would you say, though, in the last 20 years that there's been a movement toward more standardization?
That's kind of a...
In terms of safety features?
I think that, I wouldn't call it necessarily a standardization. I don't think it's actually a move, a purposeful move towards making it standard across all countries. But I think that you are seeing changes in far as regulations for safety standards that will mirror those of another country. Yes. Sorry, that was a really complicated way of saying that. I think that... There's quite a few countries out there that are adopting, or at least adopting and then slightly modifying the standards that are set by our government.
Okay. Got that. So did you have a topic that you wanted to play with this morning, the time we have?
You know, I've been seeing, especially as Christmas is coming along, coming near, you know, the holidays, everybody, you know, is trying to kind of scale back on their expenses. A lot of people are wanting to do like a lot of things themselves on their vehicle.
Okay.
And so I thought maybe we'd talk about one of those things and maybe start out real simple.
Okay.
And talk about how to replace your own air filter.
Aha. All right. Go for it.
First of all, obviously you want to make sure that you're in a safe area trying to replace your engine air filter along the side of the road or any other dangerous type area. You want to make sure you're out of the way.
And I know the next thing, the engine should be off.
Yes. The engine should be off when you're doing this. So, you know, put the vehicle in park, turn the engine off, open up the hood. I think most people are familiar with how to open up the hood. And this is, especially when it's really cold out, this is where you want to be kind of careful. Some vehicles still have the standard little rod that will pop out and hold it open, whereas a lot of other models will have what's called a hood strut. It's basically like a little it's a little shock or a little strut that when you open up the vehicle, it uses gas or hydraulics to keep the hood open. And you'll see them, there's like a little, looks just exactly like a little suspension strut. So, but as it gets colder out, sometimes those things don't like to hold like they should. You want to make sure that if you open up the hood, that maybe you hold it there for a little bit, make sure that those struts are actually going to hold. Because I've been on the receiving end of a couple of failed hood struts, and it is not a pleasant thing to have come crashing down on the back of your head.
Right. I can believe that.
Then next, of course, you want to locate the air box for the vehicle. You're going to look for most vehicles. You can see it from the top part of the engine, but you're going to look for a box. Always has a about a 3 to 4 inch diameter hose going to it, and that's where the vehicle actually takes air into the engine air box. Depending upon the make or model of the vehicle, that engine airbox is going to be either held closed with some clips or some screws. Either way, you're probably going to want to have some basic tools on hand to at least either help you open up those clips or a screwdriver for opening it to removing the screws. Take off, there's usually four, usually two on each side. And you then, at that point in time, you can remove the top part of the airbox and remove the air filter. Sometimes you have some stuff that is in the way that you're going to have to remove in order to get the air filter out. Just make sure you remember where everything goes so that way you can put it back.
And in that regard, I've found that these days, taking out your phone, which usually has a camera with it, and taking a picture before you take everything out sometimes helps.
That is a very clever idea, and absolutely, that would be a great way to do it. That way, you're right, you can remember how everything goes back together. Great idea. And then after that, after you remove the engine air filter, you're going to kind of want to shine a flashlight down in there and make sure that you don't have a big old pile of debris. Lots of times what we see is, especially if you park underneath a tree or any place where you can suck in, like, large amounts of debris. You want to make sure that there isn't anything of that left behind in the airbox. If there is, just take out a vacuum cleaner and just kind of suck it out and clean out that engine airbox real well.
Okay.
Then
when you put it all back together again and you start up, there should be no strange noises or different sounds of the engine, I would think.
Oh, yeah. You don't. Anytime on startup you have any noises coming from the engine area, that's never, well, unless it's normal engine noises. I mean, yeah, you don't want that. But the other thing that you want to remember is you want to make sure that you're putting the engine air filter back in the correct way. So once again, that camera might come in pretty handy. Take a picture of how the air filter fits inside of the box so that way you can put the new one back in the exact same position.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and then all you have to do is just reassemble.
Great description. There's another filter which increasingly seems to be available in vehicles. Back in the day, not so much, and that's the cabin air filter.
Yes. Those are a little bit trickier, especially for me to try and describe how to do it over radio. Just because every car is exceedingly different. Some you can access through the glove box. Some you have to get up underneath the footwell inside of the vehicle. Sometimes there's access panels, sometimes there's not. That one's a little bit more complicated. That one you probably have to reference your owner's manual.
Okay.
To see exactly if some owner's manuals will tell you how to do it, some won't. The cabin air filters are basically, it's an air filter for the inside of your car. And it's what helps filter out, like, dust, debris, odors, pollens, that kind of stuff. And it sits down there by your blower motor. So as air is being sucked in from the engine bay, heated or cooled, to be blown inside of the cab of the vehicle, that filter is filtering out that stuff so that way you're not sitting there choking on, you know, all sorts of debris and pollen and dust and dirt as you're driving. Those are extremely important and often forgot to be replaced because that's the whole out of sight, out of mind thing.
Right, right.
So, you want to make sure that those are replaced just as often as your engine air filter, because not only does it make the inside of your car a lot better smelling and a lot cleaner, but it also allows that blower motor to freely suck air in from the engine compartment and inside of the vehicle. And if you clog that up, it makes it harder for the blower motor to operate, which can cause premature burnout of the bearing inside of the motor.
Oh, okay. So two filters, one usually relatively easy to do. The other one you want to read more about and perhaps be one that would be changed by a technician when some other service was happening.
I know that I, for one, don't particularly like changing out my own cabin air filter just because I don't like having to cram myself up underneath the dash anymore.
Oh,
okay. I'm kind of past that point in my life.
Okay. Right.
But, you know, it's not rocket science by any means. It's just it's how far and how willing you're willing to go to replace that yourself. Most people will opt to have a technician replace it. But, you know, if you are feeling kind of froggy, and especially if you have an actual garage that you can do it in rather than try to do it out in the freezing cold in your driveway, like I said, it's really not rocket science to replace them. And even if your owner's manual doesn't tell you how to replace those cabin air filters, I'm sure you can find a video on YouTube.
Okay. Well, the other thing in the time we have left here that I know as we've hit winter, that becomes increasingly more important are your wiper blades. And those can be the most frustrating things to change I have experienced.
Oh, I'll tell you what, you know, I've rebuilt motors. I can work on my own car. But you asked me to replace a set of windshield wiper blades, and suddenly I turn into... it doesn't usually go well. They can be extremely frustrating to do. And most shops will not charge you to put them on just because they do it all the time, so it's not nearly as frustrating for them.
Right.
So, you know, if you want to try and attempt to put your own windshield wiper blades on, by all means, yeah, go ahead. But as a side note, most shops will not charge to put them on. So
right. Not only that, but I found that also parts stores, I've seen have little signs that say, if you buy the wiper blades, we'll put them on for you.
Yep. Yep, that's true. Lots of parts stores will do it too. You just need to make sure that you're getting somebody who does kind of know what they're doing.
Sure, sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say most of them are pretty standardized, but a lot of European models do have a very interesting design concept for holding on their windshield wiper blades. And sometimes, even if you do encounter somebody who's replaced, 90 sets of windshield wiper blades, that particular style can kind of stumble them up a little bit.
And there's one other thing associated with seeing well through the windshield, and I noticed that driving recently, is how quickly I get the windshield obscured with grime, et cetera. So being able to put some additional wiper fluid in is probably a good thing to do on a regular basis. It gets used up quite easily in the winter.
You know, and that's something else. And a lot of modern cars will have a sensor that will tell you when you're starting to get low on windshield washer fluid, but some don't. And that's another one that I think that people forget a lot to do until it's already too late, is to top up their windshield washer fluid. And of course, it's one of those things that you never use it unless you need it. And then sometimes when you need it, if you forget to fill it up, it's not there when you do need it. And yeah, you know, wintertime, and especially springtime in Alaska, can get really nasty. And it can make it very dangerous to drive if you forget to fill up your windshield washer fluid and you're driving along and your windshield is absolutely obscured by kick up and dirt being blown around as you're driving.
And sales of the jugs of fluid point out that a fluid that can be put in the winter where it's not going to freeze up. And then my interest, especially when I have a car I haven't filled before, is to make sure that I see something that looks like a windshield wiper blade on a window on the top cap that tells me that is actually where the windshield washer fluid goes and I don't try putting it in the wrong place.
That is another excellent point. And yeah, you do, most bottles, and 99.9% of the bottles will have a cap on it that has like a little windshield washer, a little windshield, a wiper blade, and then it'll show like some sort of spray coming up to indicate that that is the bottle that you put the windshield washer fluid in. Some bottles are clear, so you can kind of look down the side and you'll see like a little bit of blue fluid. Most windshield washer fluid is blue. Rain-X windshield washer fluid is orange. I would highly recommend that if you have a windshield washer solvent sensor to tell you when the tank is getting low, that you do not use the Rain-X brand. It will tarnish and leave behind a residue on the sensor that will ruin it.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you do have a model vehicle that has a sensor that tells you when your windshield washer fluid is getting low, please do not use the Rain-X brand or any sort of additive for your windshield washer solvent.
Okay. Well, those sound like good tips, particularly at this time of year, Toby. I know you have places to go and things to do. Any last comment before?
Yeah, I started up early today.
Any last comment before we finish?
This coming weekend is going to be Christmas, and so from Edmonds in Port Otto, we want to wish everybody out there a happy holiday, a safe and happy holiday for everybody.
Okay, we'll be talking with you then in 2 weeks or so.
All right.
Take care.
Sounds great, Mike.
Bye-bye.
You
You've been listening to You Oughta Know with Toby Edmonds. This program is a production of Radio Free Palmer, Big Cabbage Radio, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of moderators and guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions, please email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.